your powers of retention.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron and Abe. Abe might show up later. We'll see what happens here. But Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I normally discuss new movies weekly. However, every now and then, we like to have these special bonus episodes, whether it's one of our fun commentary tracks or something completely different. But this is our commentary track, our closing commentary track for 2024. We are in December, and we are going to be talking The Lion King, the 1994 animated feature celebrating its 30th anniversary this year, in honor, of course, of both that anniversary and the arrival of Barry Jenkins' Mufasa, The Lion King. That's a weird series of words to put together, but we've done it. So yeah, we're going to talk about the original animated Lion King film. Join me to do such thing. We have host of the Brandon Peters Show. Yes, he does feel the love tonight. It's Brandon Peters.
Hello.
Also joining us from the Milky Way Blues. He's never prepared. It's Yancey Burns.
Ready to blow the lid off the Lion King with you guys tonight.
Look, he's a little more prepared for that one. That was good. defies expectations. Also joining us from Movies, Films, and Flicks and Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. He used to be a young warthog. It's Mark Hoffmeyer.
This is giving me flashbacks of the Sega Genesis video game.
Oh,
that I made it all the way to Scar, but I didn't know you had to flip him. So I played the entire game, got to the end. I didn't know you had to flip the guy. And it haunts me. Like, I want to buy a Sega or get an emulator and do it, but I have no time. Just want to let everyone know that. What a terrible game. Sega made it tough on purpose.
They made a good Aladdin game, though. The Sega Genesis one, that one slapped.
Both the games are good. They're just hard as balls.
You know, they made it hard.
Balls are pretty hard.
What kind of balls? I read an article. They made it hard on purpose, so you had to rent it again. They didn't want you to beat it in a rental period.
Oh, because they knew no one was going to buy it. They wanted people to rent it.
And so it haunts
Well, that's
me.
The back in the day. Like, I it's rare that I had a Genesis. I rarely bought games. I just rent them from Blockbuster. Like, whatever reason, that just made more sense at the time. Probably because the games were expensive and you're a child.
Yeah.
So I had, like, three games I owned, but I rented everything.
But, yeah, my mom bought me a game once, and I felt really guilty about it. I was like, this is expensive.
Yeah. Anyway, by the way, this is one of the shortest movies we've done, but I have like the most notes I've ever put down, like ready for this podcast, which includes the words hard as balls video game, by the way. That's like one of the last notes I put. But yeah, we're going to talk about Lion King. If you guys plan to follow along with us and watch while we talk over Lion King, we're paused currently 5 seconds in on the movie, which is basically where the Disney logo is forming. So if you want to follow along, just pause it there. And on the sound, we're going to count down eventually on the sound to go. Just press play. You'll get to listen along. If you're listening just to listen, I mean, just be prepared for, I assume, more Sega Genesis talk along with all our discussion of the film that we're about to do. But yeah, you guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Ready to rock.
All right, let's do this. 3, 2, 1, roar.
Sega.
All right, this movie's quick, so we got to start talking.
And it's over.
Before we get to when we saw this movie, which I'll be happy to do, let's just talk about the fact that this opening scene that we're about to watch here, Circle of Life, this was the trailer for the movie. This was the first trailer. They premiered. You know what movies they premiered this with offhand?
So it's 93.
You're going to tell us.
I will tell you.
Let's see. So it's 93.
It's not Jurassic Park, huh? Was it Jurassic Park?
No, it was. It'd be Disney. It'd be Disney movies. It was for Three Musketeers, and Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, of course,
and Summersby.
Oh yeah, I saw it with Kiefer Sutherland. Sliver. Three Musketeers, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, which was very unorthodox for the time. They just showed this, like, what do we do to market this movie? Let's just show the first 4 minutes of Lion King, where they saw the whole Circle of Life sequence. I did see this trailer, and I was like, this looks amazing. As a young, at that time, 7-year-old, I'm like, I need to see this immediately. That was my
opinion. Wow, the subtitles are great. Inga Nyama, Setuqua.
It's the sing-along mode right there.
Yeah. This is a gigantic flex.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is like, you remember Bambi? Watch this.
Yeah.
Like, this was huge. This not only displayed, like, the animation, animal style, all this stuff, but the, like, Elton John being like, watch me, motherfucker. Like, just, it was an experience unto itself, this as a trailer.
The good old rack focus coming up, like.
There's a lot of, I mean, we'll talk about, there's a lot of just like animation stuff deployed here that's, especially given who was working on this, but there's a lot of, I mean, it's just really cool that they just did this. They went for that route. I feel like Dinosaur attempted the same thing by showing off like the early scene of the movie. The problem was that when the dinosaurs talk at the end of that trailer, you're like, I don't want any part of this. That was
Davey Sweeney talking.
Yeah, Shoeless Joe himself. yes, and it was not the, I don't think it was not the same flex as Disney had in '94 when they did Dinosaur. Anyway, this movie. Brandon, when did you first see Lion King?
It's probably opening weekend. Pretty sure. Disney animation was a must. At this time, no matter who you were. And this is the apex. This is if you want the peak of it, it's the Lion King. Everything was going to it. This trailer, the movie delivers. But like these musical cartoon, like animations that had like, they were cartoons, but they felt like they really like came to life on screen compared to what had come before. And it, you know, starts with the Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and then the Lion King. And then after this, I don't think any of them really achieves what they'd built up to and landed with this one.
Not in terms of like pop culture zeitgeist plus box office plus like, you know, award consideration, not in the same realm. Like,
I mean, you can have your favorites after it, but nothing achieves this. And they, I mean, like Mulan's pretty good.
Hunchback of Notre Dame is a fantastic film.
Hellfire.
But like, it's not, it doesn't do this.
Yeah. But they've, yeah, no, none of
there's
them
no,
do.
There's no Rafiki holding Simba up with all the animals cheer moment like that.
I mean, these movies used to announce themselves. Like Aladdin had a pretty good marketing campaign to like tease and introduce. And none of them like did this. I think they just like were like, fuck, we're never going to top this. And they all just kind of like came out as movies after this.
Well, I mean, I'll say it right now, I'll jump ahead a bit. Pocahontas was later this, it was 95. Mm-hmm. And so when Lion King was happening, first of it missed its release originally, which is going to be a Thanksgiving movie in 93. It missed that, so it becomes a summer movie. Nightmare Before Christmas takes its place in 93. When Lion King was being made, it was taking so long that people were working on Pocahontas at the same time. Pocahontas was considered the A picture. That was the movie that all the animators wanted to do. They thought that was going to be the one that was going to be like just the biggest thing.
It was a huge princess movie.
It's got a diversity aspect to it. They have Mel Gibson starring. It's not like Lion King doesn't have cast members, but they have Mel Gibson starring in it. And all the big animators, they were flocking over to this. So this became the B picture. This was like, okay, yeah, we'll do Lion King also. Some of us will. But obviously, like, just, this took over. This became a much bigger deal by the time it was between the marketing of it and then the eventual release.
Movies that do that, just a title and that's it, are almost always good. It's a sign of confidence, I've noticed. When you just flash the title and that's it, no directed by nothing else, almost always a good movie.
Yeah. If you show too much in a trailer, I'm worried.
Yeah. You know, signs of confidence range, but yeah, that's certainly, you know, when you could just say The Lion King and show off a musical number, you're fine. That said, Pocahontas did try the same thing. They did show off the Colors of the Wind. That was like their marketing thing. They just like, let's do the same thing Lion King did. Let's just show off that song. In that movie, you know, it did fine, but it wasn't nearly what this was. Mark, let's go to you. When did you first see Lion King?
Yeah, 94. That's just like one of my favorite years ever for films, just because I watched everything. Like I went to go see True Lies and then, you know, I bought tickets for Wolf. Wait, what's the Wolf movie? I bought tickets for that, went into The Crow, but I went and saw this, and I went and saw The Flintstones. It was just a great year for movies. Like, I think I still have all the tickets.
White
stuff,
Fang? So yeah. Is that what you're thinking
of? Yeah, White Fang 2, and then I stuck into
Wolf,
The Crow.
Wolf, right? Jack Nicholson.
I went to a theater early on a Saturday. I was like, one for Time Cop, and I was 12, and the guy's like, got you. I'm like,
yeah, Time Cop ruled, man.
I was like, you're the man. And like, Leon came out, and like, it was just like, even Major League 2 I love. But yeah, this was in the theaters, and this blew me away. Like, even at 12, you know, I wasn't too old for it. I was like, you know, watching Pulp Fiction that year too. Like, I was like, this movie rocks. The music's great. Yeah, saw it in the theaters.
Before we get too far past it, because there's only two interactions between Mufasa and Scar in this movie, the death scene. Again, this movie moves quickly.
Spoilers.
And Jeremy Irons, man.
Just talk about some of these casting choices right here. You have James Earl Jones as Mufasa. You have Jeremy Irons as Scar. before James Earl Jones. Well, they envisioned Connery. That was a
okay.
Connery was everything first in those years, wasn't it? Like, we went to Connery first. Yeah.
They also thought of Liam Neeson and Timothy Dalton. It just did not occur to them to, you know, cast a black guy as the Lion King. They eventually landed on James Earl Jones, who originally had a song, and they cut it out because James Earl Jones' voice wasn't fitting what they were kind of
planning.
Scar, among others, they had Tim Curry and Malcolm McDowell. The funny thing about that, Tim Curry and Jeremy Irons both turned down the Alex role in Clockwork Orange. Huh. Tim Curry had the role because Jeremy Irons turned this down. But then Tim Curry's like, you know what? I want to be in Home Alone 2 instead. And so he does that. Partially could be due to the fact that the script took a long time to develop, and we'll talk about more of that later. But among others for Scar, you had Alan Rickman, Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, James Caan, Robert Duvall, and Ray Liotta. A variety.
Ray Liotta.
Has Ray Liotta ever done a voice?
I think like, it could
like,
work.
Like Simpsons, I'm sure. But like, has he done like a voice in a movie? Has he ever been like the bad guy somewhere?
A Batman animated thing, probably.
Yeah.
I looked this up a while ago. But Yancey, when did you first see The Lion King?
I saw The Lion King. My friend at the time, my roommate, I think, was working at the AMC theater. So they would run the movies the night before they opened. And he invited me to come see a double feature of Lion King and True Lies.
Nice.
The night before. And I sat and watched The Lion King, and then we sat and watched like the first hour of True Lies, and I think I was too tired, and I left, and went back and saw True Lies 2 weeks later. And I think that's The Lion King second time myself. I will say my perspective is a little different than you guys in that, for me, The Lion King is just the slightest step down in quality from the preceding two, Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin, mostly because those movies had those Menken and Ashman songs, which really elevated the whole products into like Broadway show material. I think, not that I don't love Elton John and Tim Rice here, I just think it's just a tiny step down from those two. It's probably better than Little Mermaid, but like Brandon said, before Little Mermaid, for gosh 20-30 years, it was just kiddie stuff. No one was going to see The Great Mouse Detective and The Rescuers. They're all good, The Fox and the Hound, but with Little Mermaid and then especially Beauty and the Beast getting a Best Picture nod, it became like, you know, it became like Mark said, it wasn't at all really something that just kids would do. People were going to this like for date night. They would go to see Beauty and the Beast. So
people were collecting stuff off of them too. Yeah, there's like a lot of items and stuff you could collect.
Yeah, it was really a second, as they call it, a second renaissance after the initial five Disney movies. These were really the sort of best ones, certainly since Walt Disney died, to think that they were able to mount this kind of a comeback for the.
Yeah, it's like they picked the ball back up. Like it was like, whoa.
Really did. It really was a successful. Like
the king.
I'm like Robin Williams in Aladdin was getting like he should be nominated for an Oscar. Like,
yeah,
he was getting a giant buzz for that. Like
those movies were among the best movies of their year. You know, and as you said, the pretty soon the fall afterward, it's not drastic, but yeah, Pocahontas and. I don't think there's been another one. There wasn't another traditional animated movie as good as this from them, really ever. This was the sort of last highest point. As much as I like Emperor's New Groove and Tarzan and whatever,
yeah,
like
there's ones to like. It's not like they were putting out like complete shit, but like
they never went back to total. Yeah, well, they sort of did. I guess
Ebert was all about. He gave 4 stars to Hunchback and Tarzan. Like he was all over these movies.
Those played really well at the time. I mean, they're not as good as this, but they're still pretty good, you know. Especially compared to The Fox and the Hound and stuff, where I felt like they were lost.
And with the first three of these, they became like the de facto virgins for pop culture. Like that the Aladdin story. That is the Beauty and the Beast story. Yeah. That is the Little Mermaid story. Like you had to be that nerd being like, you know, actually Little Mermaid dies. You know, like had to be like that. But
here's the difference with The Lion King. It's Disney's first original story. Like obviously it takes influence from things, but compared to all their other works, it's their first original story that they've had when it comes to Lion King.
Also shout out to Jonathan Taylor Thomas, who was like, he was Hansel hot at the time.
Yeah. He was big deal back then. I mean, like this cast is just loaded.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Moira Kelly, like
you're really starting
to off Fire Walk with Me. Yeah.
Well, I mean, at the time she was still. You got, I mean, Jim Cummings, like
Jim Cummings,
and Jim Frank Welker.
from the Wolf of Snow Hollow? Oh, that Jim.
No, yeah. I mean, you got like Frank Welker. These are like voice acting royalty here, like amongst, you know, all these other, like Jeremy Irons and Nathan Lane.
Broderick. Whoopi, Cheech.
Rowan Atkinson. This soundtrack was
a huge seller, too. Like, enormous, right?
Yeah, it went 10 times. It went diamond. 10 times, yeah. Like, it's 10 times platinum. It's the biggest animated soundtrack ever. Which is
became a huge Broadway show too. Became massive.
Got all these things.
Like you couldn't get tickets to that forever.
Yep, I saw that. Was it the first one that they did like that? Wasn't it? That was the first Broadway transition, and it was very creatively done with the animal masks. It wasn't just
Just wasn't like cats.
Right. To wrap. Well, I mean, normally they did Beauty and the Beast later. It was just attempting to look like the show. The Julie Taymor's Lion King was pretty cool.
Yeah.
To wrap up this very important point, Ray Liotta was the voice in SpongeBob SquarePants.
That fits.
As well as B-Movie, where I believe he was in a relationship with like Renee Zellweger's character as a human, and she was the B.
Was he playing himself?
He was playing himself, which is... That's a whole different thing. And of course, the most notable thing that I completely forgot, Grand Theft Auto Vice City. He's the lead character. That's his whole deal.
Also, I know CDs are hot, but six of the top 12 selling soundtracks of all time came from the 90s. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, because the 90s is a
Bodyguard, huge
soundtrack
era.
Yeah, Bodyguard, Titanic.
Yeah.
Batman Forever on that?
Batman Forever soundtrack again.
Might not be on it, but it was still super high because like that was a peak. Like, but you know, Saturday Night Fever is always going to be huge, but like 90s was a key part because of like
90s was where they quit giving a shit if it tied into the film at all, and they were putting like
Godzilla,
like, trying to pop like hits in there.
Yeah, Con Air gets an Oscar nomination for it.
Because I'm sure, because the 80s was where the soundtrack started lifting off from where, you know, Saturday Night Fever started.
It was built around that.
Yeah. Flashdance, Dirty Dancing, Top Gun, like those are...
That was probably the first time where you think, were these songs even in the movie, some of them, on the album? And it would even say not all songs appear in the movie on the
Like, 90s is like, oh, they what movie was it? There's a movie where... I think Scream 2, we'll be back to that. They scrunch like six songs from the soundtrack into those closing credits.
Yeah. Same with Scream 3. Impressive. Scream 3 does the same because I had the Scream 3 soundtrack of all things.
It's like, they're Scream all in 2. There. They're all in there. You just got to, the credits really.
That Less Than Jake. But like 94, I still own the Pulp. I still have the Pulp Fiction soundtrack. I have the Crow soundtrack. Like there's some legit soundtracks that came out this year.
Natural Born Killers was a big soundtrack too, right? Yeah.
Some of those are like jukebox soundtracks where it's like all
Natural Born Killers
stuff.
Natural Born Killers was a big seller too, wasn't it? With the Trent Reznor record he did.
By default,
yeah.
I bought that used.
That Lost Highway soundtrack where Trent Reznor did.
Again, yeah.
Yeah.
A few years later, yeah.
Rowan Atkinson, who plays Zazu, of course, he had to be convinced to be in this role because he's not really a voice guy. Like, he likes his physical comedy that he's Bean. Like, that's his thing. He had to be convinced by his friend to take
the role for that.
Among others, they had John Cleese. I assume these are all English actors. Tim Brooke Taylor, Graham Garden, Bill Odie, David Jason, Peter Cook, Dudley Moore, Spike Milligan, Ronnie Barker, Ronnie Corbett, and Vic Reeves.
Yeah, they're all British.
Yeah. This song, Just Can't Wait to Be King. I don't want to talk about the live action version too much because I don't want to. I will say the make or break for me with that movie was if they can pull this song off and make it like lively and fun in the way this movie does, then I think we'll be all right. Cause the song comes fairly early on. Circle of Life, that's pretty silent. You can make that work in anything, but this song is like, this is where you know if that movie's going to work. It didn't.
The new
they're like, getting up, and there's a tower of animals at the end.
It's just fucking boring to look at. Like,
it's bad. And that's really all the energy I want to put into the Favreau movie. just to point that out, because we're at the song. Instead, we could talk about just how fun this is. As far as me seeing the movie, I saw it, opening. I couldn't wait to see Lion King. Again, I was 8 at the time now when it's coming
out. Just can't wait to see Lion King.
Just couldn't wait. I was super excited for it.
Gonna get popcorn.
Yep. All of these things. It was taking me.
Soda.
It was coming out in June. So I was like, yeah, well, I'm like, in the summer, it's like I'm waiting for this movie to happen. I finally see it. Loved it. Saw it, I want to say, at least 3 times in theaters initially. And I did see the 3D version when it came out. I saw that at D23. They had like an early showing of the 3D version of Lion King. It's like, how's that going to work? And it looked pretty good for, you know, a movie that's not intended to be that way. By the time this was out, this was basically my favorite movie outside of Batman and like Star Wars and Raiders. Like, this Lion King was, at least it was my favorite animated movie at that time. I liked Beauty and the Beast well enough. I liked Aladdin more at the time because it's like a boys movie. So I liked Aladdin more when I was a child. Then Lion King came out. I was like, well, this blew them out of the water. I was way more into Lion King than either of those, let alone other Disney movies in general. This was the one that was just doing it for me. It was on constant VHS rotation at the time. And I still hold it up very, very high. Like, it's not my favorite Disney movie, but I still it's my preferred Renaissance era Disney film. It works.
Like, how much drama went on behind the scenes too, like, that it still works. Like, this thing went through so many iterations.
Oh yeah, we can talk all about that.
That's a lot.
The inspiration of this movie is highly contestable. There's one thought was just someone said Bambi in Africa at one point. They're like, we should run with that. there was a like a European promo tour for some other Disney movie when like Katzenberg and people were like talking about songs like, we should do something in Africa. That's another like version of how this came around. Katzenberg himself was like, there's a lot of me in this because it's about the trials of his career in politics. That was like one like inspiration he had in mind. What else? Let's see. A treatment was eventually written in 89.
Crazy.
It's called The King of Kalahari. They brought on Ronald Bass, who's coming off of Rain Man at the time, winning an Oscar for Rain Man. They brought him on to like see what he could do. Title changes up to King of the Beasts and then King of the Jungle eventually. Let's see. They hire on George Scribner, who directed Oliver and Company, Disney classic, of course.
Billy Joel, baby.
Billy Joel. He wanted to make like a more non-musical documentary style animated film. They're inspired by the idea of African wildlife. They're like, let's make a movie like that like kind of like focuses on animals and whatnot in an interesting kind of way that's goes away from the whole musical thing that Disney was, you know, obviously known for. That obviously didn't happen. Roger Allers, who's one of the co-directors on Lion King, he was brought in also to kind of help develop the story because he worked on Oliver Company with Scribner. Scribner leaves eventually because he's like, I didn't want the musical thing, so no thank you. He's off. Then Rob Minkoff joins later on, so they direct the film together. They bring on a lot of other people, but mainly Brenda Chapman and Chris Sanders. Brenda Chapman, who would, of course, be famous for being fired from Brave. Also does Prince of Egypt later on as well. Chris Sanders, who, you know, he's co-directing the first How to Train Your Dragon, and he currently has done The Wild Robot. But they come on for head of story and production design. Linda Wolverton, she has a hand on this first screenplay. She leaves eventually so she can actually develop the Beauty and the Beast Broadway show that they were developing before Lion King even happened. Just comes out later on. Let's see, Jonathan Roberts and Irene Mechie come in, they write the script, that's where it becomes a musical at that point. They have a bunch of animators visit Kenya to get inspiration for animals and locations and whatnot. Pride Rock is modeled after a very famous Kenyan wildlife sanctuary. Don Hahn joins on as a producer. He has the final kind of retool of the script. Eisner suggests the whole Shakespearean angle. He brings in the kind of Hamlet, King Lear stuff. And then they're like, oh, we need a little more than just Shakespeare. So they bring in like Moses and Joseph, biblical, just kind of round out the kind of areas that this film can explore. They eventually make Scar the brother of Mufasa to make that more of an interesting way to go for, you know, a villain, because they've never done like a familial tie before in that way. So yeah, all this stuff happens. There's plenty of like people coming in. I believe Joss Whedon and Billy Bob Thornton are both like, they add a little bit to this in the same way that they like were ghostwriting a lot of stuff back in the day. They come in. Yancey's on mute if you're talking.
Billy Bob Thornton was this early, was working on.
Well, he was just a writer back then. Yeah, he was writing.
You mean he's in Tombstone? He's an actor.
Oh yeah, Tombstone. His famous role.
In that smoke wagon and go to work.
When you think about Billy Bob Thornton, you're like, oh yeah, Billy Bob Thornton from Tombstone.
The guy from Tombstone.
At that French fried
pistol and get cracking, boy.
What do you know Billy Bob Thornton for in the early 90s? He's a screenwriter mainly. That's what he's doing. He's doing things like what false move and whatnot. That's his deal. He wins an Oscar for Sling Blade before he becomes like a popular movie star.
What year was that?
Sling Blade's 96.
So how did he get on this team?
Because he's just a writer back then. So he's just around. same with Joss Whedon. He's just, you know, they're just writing. And again, their participation is minimal. They're brought in at some point, from what I could find. Tim Rice comes in eventually and he sits with the screenwriters a lot, so the songs that they're writing can be organic to the film and not just like random songs they insert. So it's just this whole Mark, you're not wrong. Any animated film is a lot of development, but this one had so much work going into just getting an idea down for what they wanted the story to be, because they went from what if we made a movie in Africa to okay, we have all of this that we have to work with. So,
and then Brad Bird comes in and wanted to make them all chefs.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? You could argue, just watching this, this is the movie that is the most intentionally based on
hero's journey,
existing myths since Star Wars. I mean, it really seems to be built into this that they're going to have as many sort of Protean myths in one movie. It reminds me of Lucas and Star Wars and how much they try to pack in there, how many stories, all the stories to tell the one story or whatever they say, you know. That's really stuff baked in.
That's a good way to think of it, because yeah, like I said, it's a Disney movie that's actually not inspired. Like the only other ones that aren't like inspired by something are like, you know, like Fantasia, or even then it's like there's no original story that like it's just.
Is that true? Is this the only one ever? Well, no, Home on the Range.
Not ever. Since then, there's been plenty of ones that aren't inspired by something specifically. But this, you know, after all the other ones that are fairy tales and myths and what have you, this is the one that's like. But in terms of what it's pulling from, yeah, I mean, I can't think of a bigger film that is culling from other things to kind of form its own story, become its own thing.
But depending on the power of those myths, like the Moses, I never thought about Moses, but yeah, he comes back and he's still alive. Yeah, he is.
It's not directly Hamlet. It's not directly Lear. It's not directly Moses or Joseph. But it has all of those things for sure.
Mythic stuff, yeah.
Random question for you guys. Uh-huh. Okay, who had the better run? Disney from 91 to 94 with Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Nightmare Before Christmas, Lion King, or Pixar between 2007 and 2010 with Ratatouille, WALL-E, Up, and Toy Story 3?
I don't like Up. The first four or five Pixars, I think, are a stronger run than that run. Although I love Ratatouille.
Yeah, that's not the run I would choose for Pixar.
Which one would you choose?
Starting Toy Story through maybe Cars, I would go. They never really dropped the ball until Brave, and that's still pretty good.
Yeah, I like Brave.
Yeah,
Disney, unfortunately, this one, you know, they ran their, I don't know what they did, but they ran it into the ground pretty quick. But yeah, I would definitely say Pixar had a more consecutive outstanding movies in a row than anyone since the original Disney pre-war batch.
You know, it's funny you say run into the ground, because I do remember watching Hunchback of Notre Dame in like 96 when I was 14, mm-hmm. and just being like, this is a lot. Like this
it's a lot. Yeah.
Like Hellfire. I'm like, what? Like this thing, like wants this lady, but like he doesn't want her, but he's going to like kill, like, but he wants her. And he's like, deal. Like this is some heavy. And then like the gargoyles come out and you're like, what's happening here? Like that. I remember being like, this is odd. This is a crazy Disney movie.
So that, and I've talked about this before, but that, I, for being 10 years old at the time, I think that was a big reason why I just wasn't big on Hunchback. It just didn't, it was doing so much. And for me, I was just, my mind at that point is like, all right, yeah, there's a lot of this or whatever. And then my dad and I, we did that and jumped to Eraser afterwards. Like, well, this is more our speed, Eraser. Like we were talking.
Sure, it's my description. I would take
your luggage.
Just had everything going for it. Big Arnold movie.
Only erases like one person's identity in that movie.
Well, right? you see him do one to get to understand his job as an eraser, a very important job in the world, and then you see him attempt to do Vanessa Williams, but that it goes haywire.
Makes sense.
I need to do a data post of like eraser and like transporter and like who does the most of their job.
Beekeeper.
In the movie.
Yeah, beekeeper.
There's so much beekeeping in that movie, though. So
I counted how much cliffhanging was in Cliffhanger. That was fun.
This seems like a good post. action movie jobs.
I've been thinking about that for a long time. I might just have to get on it.
A lot of speed and speed, I guess, so that counts.
That's not a job. I mean, that's not the name of the movie. You know, it's not called Bomber. Like
Bus Driver.
Yeah, if it was called Bus Driver, it was called Bus Driver.
Yeah.
The bus driver.
Bus captain.
Under 50,
bus
folks.
Captain.
Yeah.
So, for my money, Be Prepared is one of the best Disney songs, period, in my book.
Oh, it's great.
It's my favorite villain song, that's for sure. I know you like Hellfire so much, Mark, but this just does it. Especially for a movie, a song that has so much Nazi imagery in it, and I'm still like into it. It's like, yeah, impressive.
Well, of course, it's directly from Triumph of the Will.
Yeah.
And he said that when it came out, everyone was like, wow, the Disney's using Leni Riefenstahl. Mm-hmm. And they did. And this is probably where the Hellfire comes from, is the dark, the real darkness of this song and the imagery of, you know, it's right out of Triumph of the Will.
It's a really fun sequence as far as what it's, because the animation changes here. It becomes obviously more evil, but it's also so sickly green. Like, they really throw in the different color palette mm-hmm. here, where Africa, you have so many warm, you know, obviously you have the blues and the greens and the red. Here it's like, it looks gross. It's good. It's well animated, but it's like, oh, this clearly like has a different register than what we've been seeing so far to emphasize how, you know, fucked up this is. And also Jeremy Irons' performance, beyond just his singing, his animation is so good as Scar. You get a real like lively character out of the work being done here.
Lots of triangles. To establish might
be
evil.
The best villain, huh?
Angles.
Disney villain, are you guys?
Scar?
Yeah. Might be the best villain.
Offhand, I'd say so. I mean, it's
in terms of how effective he is in the movie, you know, like
I like the priest from Hunchback. No, I'm joking.
Gaston's pretty good.
Yeah, Gaston's great.
Gaston's
yeah.
a really
the mom and dad too.
Personal looking.
I do like that Scar essentially wins for a good long time also. Like, you know, not a lot of villains win. Scar, like, his plan works. Like, he kills Mufasa. He gets rid of Simba. He becomes
king for however many years.
Like, he gets a good long run. It's like, I won. I did my job. I did the thing I wanted to do.
He got to enjoy some years, yeah.
I was prepared. That's what he did.
Yeah, most villains only get to enjoy like a couple days.
Yeah, like Jafar is like genie for 5 minutes. And he's like, oh, no, shit, I'm stuck in the lamp.
And like what in Black Panther too, Michael B. Jordan only has what
the obvious next days. Jump, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you guys think that this character is somehow coded gay? Criticism of Jafar and Aladdin and this. Right. Yeah. And he doesn't end up with a wife later either. Like he's
fun thing about that, he was originally scripted to hit on Nala and basically try to force her to be his bride, and that was originally why she left, and not because the pride lands were fucked and she needed to find
trying to sneak some Celine Dion stuff into this. Okay,
yeah, that was developed as an idea for the plot, and then they're like, if we do this, it's going to be considered too much sexual harassment, and that'll increase the film's rating to a PG-13, and then we can't do it. They wanted a G movie, none of that. So they got all that out. As far as the queer coding goes for these Disney villain characters, I mean, the annoying thing has to be the idea of, well, because he sounds a certain way, that equals gay.
British.
flirty and British, I guess, is like the way, yet evil.
I'm just curious.
I have no real take on it. You know, it's like my mind doesn't think like automatically assigning gay to every character that like
hard to tell because it's a kids movie. Wouldn't really
decide to speak with a theatricality.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have the movie isn't concerned with romantic affairs, so it wouldn't really clear that up either way.
Look at all the Bond villains and all that. Like, there's always theatricality to the villains.
Who does the singing voice for Jonathan Taylor Thomas when he's a kid in this?
It's I knew this.
Jason Kevin Campbell?
Jason Weaver. You're right.
Jason Weaver.
Yeah, this level on Sega sucked, by the way, when he has to like do all this.
It's the second level, too. Or
like, it's miserable.
That's the make or break of the, just like the 2019 movie, it's the make or break of the game. If you can beat the Simba second level, just can't wait to be king, then you might be okay.
I got all the way to the end, too, and you can't save that crap. So like, it was a...
Yeah. There's a fun YouTube video of like Gen Y kids playing Genesis games and realizing, oh, there's no continues or game. If it's game over, you have to start at the very beginning of the game again if you lose. Yancy, to speak to your point a little bit, Hungary almost banned this movie because they were convinced Timon and Pumbaa were gay and in an unorthodox relationship as same-sex parents to Simba.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Eventually, they just ruled they're probably not gay. And they let the movie play. I guess they just like economy. I guess that was the other reason. It was like, you know what? If we don't let the movie play, we don't get to make money. Hungary has very harsh rules against homosexuality. Go Hungary. Maybe they've changed in the years since. Who knows? I could look that up, but I'm not going to.
Oh, that shot.
Has Hungary changed since The Lion King?
This Stampede
30 years is later. So much more open-minded since Timon and Pumbaa were.
Yeah, now that they're national mascots, Timon and Pumbaa.
Well, there's a lot about this sequence.
CG antelopes, right?
This took 3 years to do this whole sequence. One of the early things that they thought of as far as just things that they can do for the movie. But yeah, this, when I was a kid, the Stampede sequence is like next to the Raiders truck chase, basically my favorite action scene in movies for a good long time. Watching this Stampede scene, the fucking music here is incredible. This is Hans Zimmer's, for a long time, his only Oscar winning score, The Lion King. And oh boy, this whole sequence is great. It's great thrilling. Story. It's thrilling. And it ends in the darkest way possible.
Yeah, 94, though, this was epic watching this on the screen. Like, just like in Aladdin, the chase in the cave. The I remember just being like, holy mackerel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they always found ways to kind of wow you. Beauty and the Beast had that, too, with the big dance scene. And, like, they really were on a roll.
Yeah, the early kind of incorporations of CG and whatnot to kind of enhance their animated features. I mean, it really... Because of the effort they put into these, because that's what Disney would do, right? They put effort in. They'd create wonder. Yeah. They create, you know, stuff for people to latch onto that's more than just entertainment. There's, like, real innovation taking place here. And you know, this is certainly...
I mean, Snow White almost killed thousands of people, right?
CG, right?
Oh, yeah.
Use a CG, and this is CG, and I'm sure Little Mermaid had... Oh, the boat.
Little Mermaid is the first one that, like, uses very... Yeah, because Les Rescuers Down Under is after that, and that one has...
I think there's some Oliver and Company, like Robert Loggia's limousine. Yeah,
because it's like they have computers at that point, so they're like doing like bits here and there. I think Little Mermaid has something where it's like the first one to like really utilize it more. Then obviously Beauty and the Beast like really goes out the way, and there's a whole ballroom.
It certainly works. I mean...
This stuff is great. The Mufasa, like, I'm so like concerned for... I'm watching it now, and I'm concerned for his life. Like, I know what's going to happen.
Well, he's one of the great movie dads, isn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We talked about that whole scene where he's like talking to Simba about just what it takes to be king and like, you know, trying to reprimand him for going to the elephant graveyard, but also wanting to be a good dad.
Yeah.
This is the villainy here. Just look at him and then this happens.
Brother.
I said often to you guys that like the father-son relationship stuff, like, it, you know, it's affecting, but it doesn't, like, hit me in the same way I know it hits other people, which is, you know, it's just my own prerogative. This is one of the movies where, like, I do, like, feel it more than average, which is, you know.
Well, that's interesting. You know, when I looked up the release date, I was like, oh, geez, July 1994 was just 3 months after my dad died, and he died pretty young at my age now, actually 51. Mm-hmm. And all I remember thinking clearly when I saw this was how much he would have loved the opening 10 minutes. He would have just gone crazy for that Circle of Life scene. And I, to this day, when I watch it, I think, man, my dad would have loved this scene. I get a little misty at the thought of him seeing that, you know, all the animals at the beginning. But I don't remember this sort of stuff hitting me as, because I just lost my dad. I don't remember thinking, he was killed by antelopes, you know, whatever. Maybe it was his brother that did it.
That's how I want to go down. Brother.
Killed by antelopes.
What happened to Hoffmeyer?
He fell down in a rabid pack.
His brother.
A raging pack of antelopes.
There was survived a kid. Second time attack. I saw this, there was a kid in the theater during this screen who was inconsolably screaming and crying when he starts hitting, trying to wake up his dad and he won't wake up. There was a kid who was having his breakdown of life at that moment.
That sounds like the fully adult woman that was crying over Tom Holland in the Infinity War.
You know what my first cry was? Return of the Jedi when the Ewok died. And then his buddy's like, hey, man, you good?
And then he just falls over too. It's like,
yeah. I remember just like the feelings that welled up in young Mark when I saw that. I'm like, no. That's why when people hate on that.
Meanwhile, there's some 18-year-old like, shut up, kid. Those things suck.
Bro, Lucas is.
I never understood anybody not liking Return of the Jedi. I didn't hear that till later.
That movie,
it wasn't until like the internet.
Was talking about that, right?
Yeah, it wasn't until the internet that And Villeneuve, he didn't like it, but you don't see him just Rancor. Like constant. Someone asked him about it. He gave his opinion, and you're not going to see him talk about Return of the Jedi again. But
I remember there was a Starlog that came out. I remember reading Starlog, and Starlog was talking crap about it. I'm like, what? Who doesn't like Starlog magazine? Doesn't like Return of the Jedi?
Yeah.
Like, it was the best one at the time because it was
a return to form, right?
That's monsters.
It's insane to me. People cut off the movies before that point now, which is, I mean, that's
wild.
Yeah, that's
who cares how it ends? I don't like the bears.
Yeah, the bears are too much for kids.
Like, what? Brandon, have you you've shown your children Lion King? Of course, are they, are they fans? Do they like this?
Yeah, they are. My daughter is in their middle school play for the winter or whatever is the Lion King, and she is a hyena in it. She went out for the part of Scar. It's the one she wanted, but due to some it was well known that she had the best audition, should have had it, but there's
politics.
Some. Relative things.
Politics.
Happening. Politics. Yeah. She was, although she was recently in a production of the Addams Family as Pugsley Addams, and she crushed it. Like, I hate, you know, I'm biased in my dad, but like, it was clear she was like the scene stealer and best person. It was wild to see. It was like, it was clear as day, and it was her first production. And I think, and I'm like, how did she not get, like, I watched that, I'm like, how did she not get the part of Scar? And then I come to find, like,
I feel parental biases aside, when it comes to like kid performances and plays, you can pretty much tell which ones are the good ones, which ones are the bad ones.
And I like these parts she's going for, like Pugsley Addams and then like Scar and the Lion King. And she did her audition, she did Be Prepared, the song, and like all this stuff. So I was like, yeah, so
who, what next? She's auditioning for Willem Dafoe, Finding Nemo,
no, in Wild at Heart.
Yeah, I was
going to
say in Wild at Heart.
I want to
see
Bobby Peru, Wild at Heart.
Bought some teeth for it.
The great production of Wild at Heart.
She got the pantyhose to put over herself. So, yeah.
I want to see the Nick Cage dancing in that movie. Oh my gosh.
We to talk about the movies, we have the hyenas here. We have Whoopi Goldberg, Cheech, no Chong. Chong was actually, they wanted to get them both in there, but Chong was unavailable. So he didn't do it.
You know, it was great. The weekend, I think. When did the live action animated one come out?
Late June 2019.
Okay, I was somewhere out of town, and they went to the theater without me, and I'll never be able to thanking them for doing that.
Okay, Jim Cummings the third hyena. Hyenas. The
Jim
enthusiast.
Cummings is a fun guy, by the way.
Good,
I like him.
Hyena enthusiasts protested this film. They did not like the depiction of hyenas. It's not how they see them. They were not fans, and they boycotted The Lion King.
All 12 of them.
What did PETA think of The Lion King?
I mean, they're not real animals, so it doesn't matter. They set their sights elsewhere.
They're like watching all the animators, like, don't harm it.
Like, I couldn't find any trivia about Robert Guillaume as far as his casting here, just beyond they just wanted Robert Guillaume. He does speak Swahili. There's a lot of Swahili in this film. Most of the names are Swahili names. Rafiki's the only character that kind of goes between English and occasionally a little bit of Swahili. That's probably my guess as to at least part of why they cast him, beyond just like they wanted to be in the Robert Guillaume business. I think it's Benson and ABC. Yeah, it's an ABC show. So, like, he's already, like, in the Disney family to an extent.
Right.
And he's, you know, a Tony Award-winning actor and whatnot. Like, he's a very well-respected person.
He's okay.
My high school class went to go see Phantom of the Opera in 91, and he was a Phantom. It was terrific.
Oh, that's awesome.
He was the first black actor to play the Phantom.
He was great.
In Weber's version.
Yeah. Whoopi had a busy 94.
This is prime Whoopi era. And they, when Chong couldn't do the role, they created this character for Whoopi. And they're like, good, yeah, get Whoopi in here.
Oh, Pagemaster.
Well, she was back. She was already back in The Habits. So she could do no wrong. That was the point of that. She also had an Oscar.
What was the basketball one she was in?
Eddie.
And then Theodore Rex. Yep.
There's Teddy, the one she didn't want to do. The only actor to be like literally held hostage to do a movie like that.
The Associate, what's that one called?
The Associate, which is, most of these are really bad, by the way. That's the other thing. Much not like a lot of these Robin Williams movies in the 90s I don't like. Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
So a lot of these.
Yeah, rough after Color Purple.
Like, there's a lot of bad movies now, but I remember the 90s, you would just get some of those films, like Theodore Rex. And you're like, what's happening here? Like, everyone had one of those movies in the 90s that were just like in the theaters. And you're like, what is going on here?
Yeah, Harvey Keitel's Monkey Trouble.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
Is it really?
It's a movie that I certainly watched many times. Whether or not it's good is something I have not decided, having not seen it in many years. But Thor Birch and who's the mom in Monkey Trouble? My go-to is always Mercedes Rule because she played a lot of moms in the 90s.
I was lost in Yonkers, I think, that year.
What was the Matt LeBlanc in the monkey Ed, playing Ed, baseball? Ed. Oh, sorry.
Ed is a popular name in the night.
I just asked about Eddie, and then Ed, yeah.
Mimi Rogers is the mom in Monkey Trouble. And Christopher McDonald's in Monkey Trouble. I need to watch Monkey Trouble again, guys. A lot of good people in this movie.
I remember, Monkey. The poster of Thora Birch with the monkey.
Yeah, she's holding the monkey's holding over because he's a thief. He's holding over.
Checking her shades, I think, and right? Then, a little bit, yeah.
There's no shades. Okay. They both have backwards hats, and she's looking at the monkey like, "What monkey?
Bottom,
there's trouble."
A lot of monkey stuff in '90s, right?
Dunson checks in.
Congo.
That Rene Russo movie. What's it called? Is it
Friends for the Outbreak? First couple seasons?
Oh,
not Outbreak. The other Buddy.
Yeah.
Like it.
Friends, yes, featuring the Outbreak Monkey himself.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like kids sports movies, monkey movies, and Ed.
There was Andre, that was a walrus thing.
Andre,
right?
Might as well have been. It's the monkey of the sea, as they call them. It was a seal. It was a seal.
Flipper was out.
Flipper came back.
Slappy and the Stinkers.
Slappy and the
Stinkers. Yes.
Yeah. Seals were also, because he's like, what about animals that, you know, can just make funny faces? Yeah, seals and monkeys. Why not? Chimpanzees? Sure.
The Great
Born to Be Wild.
Yancy's got a good Slappy and the Stinker story.
Yeah, oh, that's right. I already told the Slappy and the Stinker.
For Timon and Pumbaa, we have Nathan Lane.
I was a young warthog.
We forgot about Babe too. That was another. Sorry.
Lots of monkeys and seals in that movie. Nathan Lane and Ernie Sabella. They were co-starring in Guys and Dolls at the time. And they auditioned for the Hyenas. And when they auditioned for said Hyenas, the animators were all like, obviously you're funny. You guys will be way better for Timon and Pumbaa. The directors and screenwriters. You'd be way better for the Timon and Pumbaa role. So they got those roles instead. Joe Pesci was offered either Timon or Pumbaa, and he turned it down.
Frezza, fricka, 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 fricka.
Joe Pesci at the time, he's... I mean, I guess when they're casting this, though, it's before.
I was a young warthog.
Home Alone's 90, so he's already in kid mode.
What is that one where he's blonde, Johnny? The Barry Levinson movie where Pesci's blonde.
Lethal.
Not Gone Fishing. Those are two other really bad movies. Like Gone Fishing, 90s.
Yeah, remember Jimmy Hollywood?
I'm looking for it. Hold on. I'll try to find it.
Blonde Pesci.
Jimmy Hollywood, yeah. Same year.
He was blonde, yeah. Blonde Pesci. He couldn't do this.
There's a lot of those kind of movies in the 90s, too.
Jimmy Hollywood. God, talk about forgotten. Levinson has so many, like, forgotten weird movies in between, like, his notable moments. Because he had, like, Rain Man, then Avalon. Like, I'm sure at the Avalon? time people were like, oh yeah, Avalon, do better out now. People nowadays people are like, what the fuck's Avalon?
Because no one put it's one of the great movies of the 90s, Avalon. I love that movie.
No one talks about Avalon. It's like it's forgotten as far as
it been out on it was on DVD. That was the last time it was been out.
Yeah.
It's my heart. Like, I love that movie.
Like Tin Men, like I know these exist.
Tin Men's great.
But like Levinson has such a weird filmography in that way.
Seeing it from Diner through Bugsy, he was pretty solid. And then
it's not a quality thing. It's a matter of who's like when you think of Levinson, like those don't ever come up ever in that conversation.
Also, Tin Men hasn't been on released in any format. That's with DeVito and Dreyfuss. That's a really good movie.
What's the third one in his little trilogy?
There's Liberty Heights.
The second one then. Because Liberty Heights, that's a great movie, never came out.
Avalon's the third one.
Yeah.
His best movie, the best movie about like Jewish experience in America, that movie.
Yeah, his movies haven't really moved to formats.
Well, Bugsy is Warren Beatty is in charge of that one, so that's never going to come out.
Yeah. Well, like weird. Bandit's got a cheapo Olive Films one.
Yeah. Anyway, we're talking about Barry Levinson too much.
What a great song.
80-minute movie.
We're on Hakuna Matata right now.
Yep.
There was a funny time where I paid attention to American Idol for a couple minutes because there was a guy, it was in the mid-late 2000s, there was a guy on there named like Sanjaya, and he was so bad, and people kept voting him because he was bad. And I tuned him one time to see like how bad this guy was, and he did Hakuna Matata, and it was just awful.
Okay,
but they pushed him along so far in the process because it was like ironic voting was getting him along the way, and he was just not good. But I remember they did like a Disney night, and Hakuna Matata was like his song, and it was just woof.
Is Scar munching on like antelopes?
Yeah, because they've ate everything. Everything. Pride Rock is dead. The video game makes it worse because you just keep jumping on bones. Like everything's become the elephant graveyard. It's so sad when you really think about like what Scar's done. Scar's America.
Yeah, I never played that right one. Now. I never played this game.
Oh man, it's insane, guys.
I rocked Aladdin. Like I didn't have a Sega Genesis, but my neighbor friends did, and man, we would play like Aladdin was awesome. And I had like I rented Aladdin on Super Nintendo. It was not the same game. It was not even near as fun.
PlayStation released Aladdin, Lion King, Double Pack, Genesis games. Both for SNES. All the versions of both games, they're on one like disc now, so I can play these whenever I want to.
I remember like the Jurassic Park. Very frustrating. Jurassic Parks were different for no reason. Like the game, like
The Genesis and the Super Nintendo games were always
you could
like,
play as a raptor.
Different versions of them.
Yeah.
Genesis was cooler because it had you could play it as Grant or a raptor.
Yeah.
And there's a great water level too.
With just
the water level
cooler...
that's deleted out of the movie, but they put it in the game.
It rocks.
They had cooler X-Men games on Genesis too. Oh.
That's right. Yeah, they did.
And the Spider-Man the Carnage. Yeah.
Uh-huh. They're cool games of Genesis. I mean, they're all fun.
Is there a Hunchback game? I'm sure
they're all about keeping that system as long as they could too. When you had like Sega CD, then the you had the 32X.
We got through that scene where Zazie's
the Hunchback game is an RPG where he's just trying to get with the lady. I'm like, you got
really?
To set that. No, I don't know. That'd be crazy.
It's a dating game.
I'm sure there was one.
That sequence there where Zazie's in the little prison and at one point he sings It's a Small World and Scar tells him to shut up. In the play version, or you know, the show version now that we're years later, he sings Let It Go, and then Scar tells him to shut up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because kids don't know that Small World. They have to go to Disney.
Because like, they don't have that at the park anymore.
No, they have It's a Small World. They just,
I'm
you
just
have
kidding.
To,
why would
go
know that
but say, if you sing Let It Go, it'll get a huge reaction out of the audience.
Right.
Yeah.
This game.
Are you playing it?
He's playing it right now.
He's got an emulator.
I made it all the way to the end, and I didn't know that you had to jump over Scar and then flip him off the rock. So I just hit him in the face. I hit him in the face for like an hour, and like because once he got you were done. So I was like, thwap, thwap, thwap. I'm like, what's happening? What am I doing? And I never got to finish it.
Well, it's,
and
like,
it's ironic because Scar is another one of these villains who shouldn't be tough to fight at all in this movie too.
He's wiry.
Yeah, he's wiry. He's Reese Ethan.
You don't get a scar on your face because you haven't seen some battles in your time.
He even says at the beginning, "I went the scrawny end of the gene pool. He couldn't beat anybody up."
Yeah, that's Bond villain stuff. That's Hugo Drax being like, "Yeah, I can take on Bond."
Yeah,
I can fight James Bond. Sure.
Roger Moore doesn't beat up Kurt Jurgens at the end of Spy Who Loved Me, does he?
No, it's the best. He's just casually shoots him through his fucking gun hole. Yeah. It's great. But Christopher Lee is like, that's his whole deal. We'll talk about that another time. Joseph Williams provides the voice for adult singing Simba because this movie just really did not want to cast black actors for their Africa movie.
See Broderick can sing, though.
Why would you?
Because Broderick sang in the producers. He's not a good enough singer for this.
Well, I mean, he had to learn his voice, I guess. I don't know. He didn't do it. Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane,
They brought Elton John in, man.
Yeah. Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane only met like once, like passing each other in a hallway during the making of this movie because they didn't record these.
That's right.
They don't record these together.
Oh, right.
The only person Matthew Broderick recorded with was Moira Kelly. But otherwise, everybody was separate from each other because that's just how they make these movies. Eddie Murphy still doesn't know Mike Myers. That's partially true. but they didn't meet until like the premiere on Shrek.
Isn't it amazing they've never done a movie with like just like 40 characters wearing prosthetics together? Like just the two of them. Like multiple characters.
Yeah. Well, the Disney ones don't, but like Fantastic Mr. Fox, that's what they did. They just did stuff out in the world and filmed things, which is really fun to watch on the Criterion. Yeah. Same with Rango. Rango, they made it like a stage production where they just did all the parts dressed as little cowboys and stuff and did the thing.
So, you know what? It's very so you think Moira Kelly is doing between this and Fire Walk With Me at the same time?
Yes. very much so, yes. Very much.
The cutting edge.
That's
that was
nuts.
And the cutting edge, all the same time.
Oh, and the cutting yes. Toe pick.
You have DB Sweeney. Yeah, dinosaur name.
I thought she was going to be somebody after Cutting Edge. She's really good in that movie.
Yeah.
She kind of never went too far. I thought she was really great, Laura Kelly.
Yeah.
Pinja again.
This must be the check she gets when this check comes in. Laura Kelly's.
Yeah, that's why.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sally Dworsky provides the voice for Moira Kelly, by the way.
Xbox.
For his singing voice.
Well, who was it?
Sally Dworsky.
Yeah.
She's also does singing in The Prince of Egypt as well.
Sally D.
And she's performed with R.E.M., Peter Gabriel, Bonnie Raitt, and Neil Diamond.
I can buy Lion King right now for $25.
Game?
It's like the PlayStation game with Aladdin. That's a better deal right there. That's why I like $20. Yeah.
There was a bug eating level too on the game.
It was always a bonus level. It'd be at the end of the levels, you'd be Timon and Pumbaa. You'd like race around trying to collect all the bugs you can, and you get like an extra life if you did a lot.
So Moira Kelly came back for Lion King 2: Simba's Pride.
Damn right, family pride.
Get it, guys? Get it?
Oh,
yeah. See,
yeah. I remember Return of Jafar was like a big deal. Like, I had the cassette.
That was a huge deal.
And I was like, it's fine.
The next one was when Robin Williams came back.
Robin Williams came back, so they tried to make that a big deal, too. But I remember the push for Return of the Jafar was pretty big.
Because it was the first one of those that they, like, did a direct-to-DVD sequel. And when I grew up, I really liked Return of Jafar. Because, for one thing, it had a villain song, which Aladdin didn't. And so it's like, good. Finally, we got Jafar singing, because Jonathan's a good voice.
Hellfire.
But the whole deal with Return of Jafar was... Well, no, because Aladdin, the first Aladdin, did Robin Williams dirty, and Disney did him dirty in a way where either they advertised
Dan Castellaneta, right?
It's Dan Castellaneta that does the voice, but Disney did something dirty with Robin Williams as far as like how they advertised him for the movie in a way that he didn't want, and so that's why he didn't specifically return for Return of Jafar. And then they made peace with him within that time, probably because of the flubber paycheck that he got, and so he came back to do King of Thieves.
That check cleared, and so he came back.
Yeah, exactly. But studios often were doing like Robin Williams had a lot of things where like I don't want you to use me this way, and then they do it that way anyway because Robin Williams was a big name. I mean, they'd sell off of it.
And that was that whole movement to start doing DTV sequels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and now they're doing them in theaters, but that was
kind of. That was the Disney thing. It was like, oh, we don't do sequels in theaters, except for the Rescues.
Rescuers Down Under, and then like Fantasia 2000, which is like, that's really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that song, it's Why Should I Worry? That's the Billy Joel song.
That is the Billy Joel song from Oliver Company.
I had to get that out there.
Good, because it's a song we all know.
Why should I worry? It's a great song.
It's not a Billy Joel song, actually. It's
very Lion King-esque song. Like, I feel like Timon and Pumbaa would sing that.
Simba's adult hair is supposedly modeled after John Bon Jovi.
No kidding.
Oh, okay.
I buy it. Right in that Blaze of Glory, Young Guns 2 period, right?
Do you want to guess who else they thought of for Simba besides Matthew Broderick? I don't think it's too hard to get if you kind of think about what kind of popular male actor of that kind of age.
John Cryer.
John Cusack.
Let's go with actors that are actually in things.
See Thomas Howell.
90s.
Al Pacino.
See Thomas Howell's not in movies of the 90s anymore.
Brian Dennehy.
Dennehy as Simba?
That'd be the angriest Simba.
These are way simpler guesses than you're going for here.
Adam Sandler. Matthew Broderick age Simba.
What's another popular 80s star that becomes like a, you know, more of an adult in the 90s?
Kiefer.
Okay, see Thomas Howell.
Lou Cusack, it's not John Cusack. Yeah. It's not Tom Cruise.
Cusack's a lot more closer than fucking
Anthony Michael Hall.
Anthony Edwards.
George Clooney.
Michael J. Fox is the answer to that question.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, he was down the line.
That makes sense.
He was after C. Thomas Howell. You're right.
C. Thomas Howell's voice.
He was a perfectly nice man that I met the other day. So nothing, no problem with C. Thomas Howell. He's fine.
Stop dissing him.
He might have been a little bit too of like a rapscallion, like a Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
Simba.
But he would be in what? Atlantis later on, right? So
I feel like Michael J. Fox is a distracting voice casting.
No, I agree. I think Broderick has more. Broderick brings more of a kind of underdog hero type vibe to what he's.
I know he headlines your Godzilla movie like years after this, but was he really big deal in 93-94?
Matthew Broderick?
Yeah.
Like, when did he have that accident in Scotland?
Yeah, when he kills somebody.
He already killed somebody.
It's right after Ferris. It happens very quickly.
Ferris is many years before this.
It's 86. It's not that far before. 87.
Broderick. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's sitting in the same area as like a Cryer or. Like, what's he in?
Well, he has Glory in 89.
He has Glory, which is a huge hit. Okay. He's still Glory. In things. I can't think of things Thomas Howell is in 89 at that point. Like,
Cable Guy.
Well, I'm talking like 90, when this movie comes out.
The Freshman with
Freshman.
Brando.
Oh, okay. I like the remake better.
I'm joking.
About the verb pipe.
No, I mean, you're not right. I'm not saying like he's a giant A-list star, but he's in more notable things. Still.
Road to Wellville.
Road to Wellville.
It's a terrible movie.
Beloved classic.
Oh, wait, The Night We Never Met.
Oh, that's right. Mr. Wonderful. Is he in Mr. Wonderful?
So at this time, C. Thomas Howell is during this year is in Acting on Impulse. And Jailbait and Gettysburg.
Gettysburg. The movie you make because Glory's such a hit.
And Treacherous.
The erotic thriller and then Gettysburg. He's in.
Seduction. He's all over the place. He's working.
Gettysburg was kind of the hot, was big. Like, I feel like every lazy history teacher was like, I'm just going to put this on.
My history teacher had like the cardboard stand up for the movie theater in his classroom.
I can put this on. I can get a whole week's worth of classes.
It was as far. It had certain presence, but it was a giant flop. Like it wasn't a big hit at all.
Oh wait, Milk Money did come out in '94.
It's a terrible movie.
And Lightning Jack.
You think Gettysburg was a flop? Wasn't it made for TV originally?
It was a miniseries on TNT, but it's still like it was like. Was it like recut? Because it's fucking 4 hours, right? But it was.
Let's not forget C. Thomas Howell. C. Thomas Howell was in the Michael Jackson "Black or White" music video. Pretty big deal.
Ooh, and above the rim. Regulators.
Oh yeah.
We just talked over all of "Can You Feel the Love Tonight," the song that does win the award.
Yeah, but we mentioned Regulators, so
it was a cool
flip a coin.
This movie was nominated for 4 Oscars. Do you know what they were?
Song, sound.
Sound editing.
Film.
That wasn't... That wasn't
no, was that not here yet? No, no.
Score.
Beauty and the Beast is the one that gets Best Picture nom.
Yeah. Was it score, sound, and then like score, song, and mixing?
It's partially a trick. It's score and then three songs.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
What songs do you think?
Hakuna Matata, Circle of Life, and
yeah, you know, that's it.
Okay, Aaron, I'll give you John Cryer. He wasn't doing shit.
Superman 4 didn't launch him back into stratosphere.
Well, I mean, he like after Superman 4, he's in Dudes.
Yeah, but then he had what Men Behaving Badly show with Sheen, and he just made bank.
He directed for a while.
That doesn't happen for a while. But he was in one episode of Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
No, was he the third?
And Mister, he played Ducky on Mister Show. Wow.
Ooh, I want to hear 94 RDJ voicing Simba.
And he, holy he man, with Eddie Murphy,
that would have fit. He would have fit in this kind of period. He's probably too much of a bad boy because, like, yeah, he's
in an alley somewhere.
94, yeah, he's not Disney's preferred person at this point.
Wait, RDJ's voicing who?
As Simba.
Yeah, and then Spader is Scar. Got it.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
Well, Spader is Simba.
There would have to be a lot more head tilting.
Yeah. Spader could be a good Scar.
Like Spader and stuff like Simba.
He could be a good Scar, like, later on, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, hey. Simba.
This was one of the last second editions, or at least the concept of the scene was one of the later things that they added because they needed to give Simba more of a drive to go back to Pride Rock. And it's like, oh, what if we have his dad show up? Like, yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Hey,
and
son,
it becomes the to be or not to be sequence. Like that's what they refer to it as.
I remember what Kung Pao Enter the Fist parodied this scene.
Oh, it must have been hilarious.
And Mufasa goes,
I'm going
this
home.
This is CNN. this movie, yeah, lots of parodying and like that's this iconic shit. Like I've seen at sports stadiums where between like timeouts and stuff, they have a Lion King thing where people have babies and they hold them like up playing Circle of Life on Jumbotron shit.
Yeah. That's very funny always. I do like that a lot.
Yeah. So I mean
Simpsons is my favorite one when Murphy dies and they have him come out, even though he's not James Earl Jones specifically.
Yeah.
But Mufasa comes out and he does the fun thing where he says Simba, because of the whole Kimba the White Lion thing. The Kimba the White Lion thing, by the way. There was another, among other supposed controversies, some thought that Kimba the White Lion was, that this movie plagiarized from it. When you really look at it, like every plagiarism case that ever occurs, it's usually like pretty much just tangential stuff that doesn't really add up to much, just beyond the fact that Kimba sounds like Simba and involves lions, but
not to be confused with the band White Lion.
But of course not. But if you're making a movie about Africa, you're going to wind up with a lot of the same animals and do a lot of the same stuff. Basically, there's never been, even the person, one of the people behind Kimba the White Lion is like, no, we don't see it. This is different things. Whatever. Don't worry about it. Matthew Broderick, though, he thought he was originally going to be in a remake of Kimba the White Lion because he knew of it already. Most people have, because it's Japanese and it wasn't available in America. Let's see, This is one of the first this is the first Disney movie to be dubbed in Zulu. Since then, we've had things like Moana being dubbed in one of the Pacific Island Nation languages and things like that. But yeah, this one traveled far.
Gorgeous animation.
It is. When I was young, I really liked what they were doing with this stuff because it looked different from a lot of the rest of the movie, where you're like going through the woods and stuff like this. Mm-hmm.
It's got that sheen on top of the head.
And it's also like
fog or something they can't see.
It's also fun because like Rafiki's a fun character.
Oh yeah.
So like you're in this like kind of mystery environment, but you still have like Robert Guillaume leading you along, his big blue ass. Nancy, have your kids watched Lion King yet?
Oh yeah, many times. I don't know how much they've gotten it, but it was the first movie that my wife showed Arthur when he came out from the hospital. Like that afternoon, she put him on her chest.
Right away.
Yep.
Hook him in.
My wife saw this 23 times in the theater.
That's
worship
all.
This corporation. Worship it.
Yeah.
In honor of D23?
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing about Disney and the whole giant corporation thing is they have good product, or at least they used
right.
to.
Right. That's why you could justify submitting to them.
Well, it's like stuff. I mean, if you just go to the parks and watch the movies, what's it's a good deal? I mean, great stuff.
It's why it's hard to stay mad at Disney when they do weird things. It's like, I mean, they gave us all this stuff. They gave us a streaming service where we could watch any of their movies right away. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of Simba looking into the water and he sees Bob reflecting out of it. Like, what's that mean? Hold on.
I hate when my cloud dad comes and harasses me.
Cloud dad.
Sorry. I think we...
Cloud dad. Just call me, man.
See you at the crossroad.
We skipped over the scene where Simba lays down in the dust and the dust Uncle forms the letters. I know another controversy because they supposedly thought it said sex.
Oh, yeah. Yep,
actually was SFX for the special effects artists.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people like to run with their rumors.
And then there's like the boner in Little Mermaid, right?
Along with the like some of the King Triton's world is shaped certain ways.
I will say this. When we were QCing the Blu-rays for Wall-E, we saw there's like some like walls like in the menu with like graffiti on them. We found a penis.
Mm.
It was removed. Yep. Those Disney animators are crafty ones, but we got him then.
That's my daughter's favorite movie, Wall-E. It's good.
Your daughter sounds smart.
Yeah. And also, I had to write a script if Wall-E's Satan for film theory. So I had to analyze it and ponder if he's Satan with Eve, like, wrecking paradise. He's not.
They don't wreck paradise. If anything, they removed them from what was considered a paradise.
Yeah.
That was a false paradise.
Mm-hmm. But that was a theory. Film theory wanted to pursue it. I was like, yeah, that's fine. I like Wall-E.
We passed over the scene where Timon is singing Lion Sleeps the Night. That caused a huge lawsuit that had to be settled. Couldn't just do that.
That's the first time I heard that song ever in my life was in this Ditto. Movie.
Yep.
I know it came in movies like Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, right?
Yeah.
See what else? First Disney movie where the main character's father dies explicitly. Doesn't happen again until The Good Dinosaur. It's also the first animated movie with a commentary track.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, and we're adding to its legacy right now.
Wait, when did it have that? Like when it the Laserdisc?
I assume when it was.
Because Kong had the Laserdisc had a commentary track.
The first animated
movie with a commentary.
Oh, first animated.
It was a big box set that I had, the big Lion King Laserdisc box set, and it must have had a commentary. Surprise, Beauty and the Beast didn't get one before that, though.
Speaking of movies where the father should have died, whew, no, it's okay.
Crazy old Maurice.
Well, where were Aladdin's parents? I just need to ask that. Right,
it was a street rat.
We need the prequel.
What I'm saying is, it's the first one where the parent actually dies in the movie, as opposed to like he was born an orphan or whatever. Like it, you know, it's not already established. Simba had a father, and he dies within the movie. It's the first Disney movie to do that.
Yeah, there's always a ton of orphans. You're right.
Yeah, a lot of parents lost at sea, boat trips back then, guys. Oh man,
these guys were not sustainable boat trips.
And he probably doesn't die on camera.
Man.
And that's a mother, as opposed to, again, father. randomly, this is Gregory Peck's favorite animated movie and one of his favorite top five films.
Oh.
The Peckster.
Gregory Peck?
Gregory Peck. He loved the fucking Lion King. He was like, this is my jam. He furrowed his eyebrows and everything when he got Saw Mufasa die.
Well, there's something to be said for 80-something minute movies, you know.
Mufasa?
He likes what he likes.
Mm-hmm.
This one's tough for me to rewatch just because, like, there's a lot of, like, the dad dies and then there's just a lot of weight to it. Like, my most, like, the movies I love to rewatch are just, like, Minions or
See what I hear. What I like about it is that it's really, it's a well-rounded journey for me. Like when I'm watching this, it yes, it has like emotional elements, but it has a lot of comedy. It has a lot of different kinds of songs. It has a variety of different animation. Like there's just a lot of like different things happening within the film. So it feels like a full meal for me. Where if I'm watching certain other ones, it's just kind of one track the whole time. It doesn't make it necessarily bad, but in terms of why I watch The Lion King a lot more, I think it's because it's doing a lot of different stuff within the, you know, the 80 minutes that we spend with it.
I've always wanted to say, oh, we're going to fight your uncle for this. Like, I want to be, before I die, I want to say that line to somebody.
it's pretty funny.
I get recruited. We're fighting your uncle for this? Come on. It's a short story.
I mean, he's not wrong, but then, you know, Simba wins and, like, immediately the land comes back to life, so it's no worries.
Right. For the rest of your days.
The live bait thing was hilarious.
The line that Nathan Lane says there when he's like, cross-dressed, put on a hoop, whatever, that's improv by Nathan Lane. And they were going to do like a Saturday Night Fever thing at first before they chose this instead. So,
The easy go-to, Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
Thank God they didn't do that.
Yeah, because it'd be dumb.
A slice of pizza and walking.
it sounds dumb saying it. Like they would do a Saturday Night Fever distraction to get the hyenas away.
Where have I seen this before?
Which TV station does me, a lion, have to have seen this?
Yeah, and immediately I think, well, it didn't even occur to me what year this was taking place. Once you do a
Are there humans in this world?
No. This is also one of three Disney movies that doesn't have humans in it.
Well, you can't see them. Like Lady and the Tramp, you can't see them, right? They.
But they're still, like, I mean, a man literally hands them a plate of pasta. Like, they're humans in that movie. The other ones. I had that on here somewhere.
Pete? No. Disney, the bird ones.
Oh, the bird ones.
Emperor's New Groove didn't have humans, right?
All humans.
Not to me.
Wreck-It Ralph,
just Bambi, and Robin Hood
characters. Ah,
Bambi, right? Okay.
Oh yeah, Robin Hood, right?
That's kind of cheating, but it makes sense, I guess.
Not cheating? There's no humans in it. That's their animals. Good point.
Which Robin Hood? That's another one where they actually made people's like de facto Robin Hood movie, which is crazy because that's like a lot of people know Robin Errol Hood Flynn. From that. Yeah. Well, there's Errol Flynn, but like that Disney one is staple.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't hurt that they kept making bad Robin Hood movies that really didn't really, that made it.
I like Robin and Marion.
I mean, that Taron Egerton one is fire.
Which one?
You're right. It should be burned in a fire. That's right. The Taron Egerton.
Terrible Taron Egerton Robin Hood.
But is it Jamie Foxx?
Jamie Foxx, yeah, and Ben Mendelsohn.
Now, I feel like everyone was watching Prince of Thieves, or like every dad, like most
it was a
dads
hit.
In the suburbs were watching Prince of Thieves. So that was like my first Robin Hood.
As a child, I always got really wrapped up in the minutia of like what's going on. It felt like it's a very like from a certain point of view kind of conversation that they're having right now when Simba's being like, wait a minute, hold on, you killed him, but you did this. I'm like, wait a minute, what? I did that. I didn't do that. You did this.
You did what with my mom?
And like the other lines, the other lines are like, wait, what's happening here? Like the confrontation is so, it's like more convoluted than it needs to be because it's just like two people presenting kinds of sides of stories to reveal things about themselves.
Oh, we're out of here then.
That's a fun rotation shot right here.
Kevin Smith borrowed this for Clerks too.
Let's see, before Moira Kelly, they had Lori Loughlin, Brooke Shields, Leah Thompson, Julia Roberts, Winona Ryder, and Demi Moore. Sounds like they just ran out of money. That's a lot. It sounds like they already hired on all these other people. They're like, we can't afford Julia Roberts anymore.
Who's on the rise?
What else can we get here?
We need a fresh talent.
Sound like they were going for that like Broderick like match talent for like if you got Laughlin in there and a couple other names, I was like, okay, that's right in that list, like was hot for a minute in the '80s type thing.
Like Roberts and Demi Moore and Winona Ryder, they're all huge at that point. Like that, Leah Thompson, Brooke Shields,
Laughlin. Hunchback too, right? Is he a Hunchback?
Hunchback gets Demi Moore, yes.
Oh. I mean, Laughlin's on Full House at the time, but
Demi Moore is also the biggest star of that movie, so it's a little different at that point.
Hellfire.
Next to Jason Alexander as Talking Gargoyle.
Kevin Kline.
Kevin Kline. Demi Moore is still the bigger star.
Yeah, Demi Moore is rolling then.
Yeah, Ghost and
Decent
Proposal.
Yeah, she's one of the biggest stars on the planet.
Well, she just got all that money for Striptease at that point.
Had they started Planet Hollywood yet?
At 96? Yeah, they probably must have at that point. Yeah. Because they're parodying it in Last Action Hero, aren't they? That they like took these like Arnold's literally like trying to promote the restaurant and all that.
Maybe.
Because like Maria Shriver like goes out is like, don't talk about the restaurant, it's so tacky.
It must have been like right when it was starting too.
Yeah,
it's Shotzi on Main too. Don't forget Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
In Santa Monica,
this wreck shop.
I don't talk about it much outside the Stampede, but the action stuff is really good and it's very visceral with all the, which is again why the hyena people don't like it, because they're mad at the hyenas being portrayed so viciously in this movie.
There's much more of a boys' movie the last few, also, it's fair to say.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's not following a princess, or the princess isn't at least the main character in the same way that Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid are. You have Aladdin and this, and you get her with Hercules later and Hunchback.
You know, I'm from Florida, and I think you should be more worried about warthogs than hyenas.
Yes.
Like, those things are crazy. Yeah.
They have fucking tusks.
Right?
Hyenas are the cleanup crew. They're like, you guys do your thing. We'll come in later on and have whatever's left. So that's a hyena. They don't come at you.
Yeah, they pay people in Florida to go shoot the things. Like, please, guys.
Yeah, because warthogs and pigs, they'll kill you. They'll gore you. Exactly. Like, you will die.
Yeah. They're deceptively fast. They will, strong as hell.
My dad tried to get me hunting one time. He's like, we get paid if we kill them. You want to come? And I'm like, no.
This is officially a Fuck Pumbaa podcast.
Well, it's same with, like, hippos. You know, the deadliest thing in Africa. Those things will fuck you up.
Yeah.
They kill more people than anything.
Tongo had the LSD hippos.
Say that again?
Tongo had the LSD hippos. Hippos on LSD attacked them in the Congo.
That's how I want to go down.
Congo might come up again someday.
Not a bad movie, really. Not good.
I don't think I've seen it since the theater.
Congo is very fun. Whether or not you want to apply good or bad to it, that's besides the point. It's a foot
I like. I remember. I like. Cake. I thought with Crichton, I liked the book for Sphere a lot, and then the movie sucked. And the book for Congo was okay, but the movie was better than Sphere.
Like Laura Linney and Ernie Hudson just shooting down missiles with flare guns is one of my favorite.
We'll put in Congo talk next year. I guarantee you this. It is the 30th anniversary of Congo. I haven't thought about this a lot. Okay.
I'm pretty sure
we have a slow motion John Woo fight right now between Mufasa and Scar. We can talk about that.
Mufasa died, dude.
There's some doves flying
with Scar around. And Simba right now. I'm sorry. Yeah. He looks so much like his father.
R.I.P.
That's the flip. I never knew that. I should have remembered that.
That's what you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
This is a horribly graphic death for your villain, by the way. He's going to get ripped apart alive by hyenas while fire burns all of them. Every other villain just like falls down a big gap somewhere. This guy
Scar is a badass to the end, man.
He went out fighting.
He even goes like, horrifically. That's like a triumph.
He's going to take down 20.
And this is back to back for Jeremy Irons. You know, next year he gets burned up in a helicopter crash.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
He's wiry.
Look at this. Look, hyenas are ripping him alive. And the whole mountain's on fire. It's a horrible way to go.
Here comes the rain.
Hyenas really didn't care about their safety either. Like, we need to get back at the Scar guy for saying bad things about us for 5 minutes. I don't care if I die in a fire. I have to kill Scar.
Well, I mean, it's a good look. It's a good look if you think about it, because they're like, all right, we got a new king. We'll kill this guy and be like, hey, man, my bad.
Yeah, I don't even have a chance for that. talk about being prepared. Simba had a plan too. He's like, guys, okay, you're gonna come in, distract him with a hula dance, and we're gonna fucking destroy the whole gang of hyenas. And they succeed. They kill every hyena in one
crushed
swoop.
It.
It's like when the pirate ghosts come in and Return of the King. They just get it done. That's it. We're done. We finished. Mm-hmm. We got our requirement.
They say, guys, can I borrow you for 10 more minutes? Like,
yeah. They're good in the fight.
Yeah. There's a place called Mordor. Can you go run it down?
I like Ghibli's self-awareness in that moment. He's like, we should have been using these guys. Like, this is great. We should keep them around. Finally.
Gotta keep my word.
What were we thinking? A circle.
I love a good rain fight too, but we didn't get one. This could have been Hobbs and Shaw.
Was it? Did they do that? Was it? Was this the Lion King 1.5? One and a half.
It's good. That's a good one.
Yeah. Nothing like Cop and a Half though.
Oh, so wait. Jackass wasn't the first one to do that.
No, Jackass was not the first one to do that. Hmm. But they also do 0.5s. This one, the Lion King, was literally 1.5. That's how the guy on the TV commercials read it. Lion King 1.5. That's how it went, which came after Lion King 2. I like that they couldn't do. They didn't want to do Lion King 3. They're just like, we'll just make a prequel weird sequel movie where we'll insert Timon and Pumbaa like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern within other events of the Lion King.
There you go.
And it worked because it was like, yes, a good movie. And
it's
like,
funny. Yeah, it's funny.
It's the job.
And it's Nathan Lane and Sabella against leaning on those guys.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So yeah,
they had to clean up a lot of bones.
It gets great reviews. It makes its initial run. It makes $763 million worldwide, which is the highest of that year, and the second highest movie ever behind Jurassic Park at that time. Mm. It was enormous. It was the highest animated film until Finding Nemo. It's still the highest traditionally animated film. Its re-release has put it up to $978 million worldwide. It's the best-selling VHS of all time. It was the fifth highest grossing film of the 90s domestically. The IMAX re-release was in 2002. The 3D release was huge. You guys remember when the 3D release came out? It made a $30 million opening weekend and then made like $200 worldwide just from the 3D re-release alone. People love The Lion King. It was just
a shame that it's all been wiped away by the Favreau version now. No one watches this.
Nope. You want the real one.
Yep.
Doesn't get any
faster. Tears in the Rain. It's all Tears in the Rain.
The Broadway show does come out in 97. I saw that in at the Pantages Theater in L.A. with my mom. And it was also the first time I went to Roscoe's. We went to Roscoe's before I saw The Lion King.
I saw it at the Pantages as well.
And I love this movie. I still think the show is spectacular. I like it. It's it might be my favorite version of Lion King. It's a really well done show. Like it's so much showcased for like a lot of different African languages are presented in it. The costume designs and everything because it's Julie Taymor show. Like it looks so amazing take in, and like seeing Circle of Life where animals are like coming down the aisles and everything. It's a really cool way to present that.
Wow, these are long credits too. So this is short.
A lot of people worked on this, Mark. Yeah.
So Simba's Pride, Lion King 1.5.
I'm there used for Marvel movies, you know.
There is a Timon and Pumbaa animated series for like 5 years. There was the Lion Guard animated series for a few years. Obviously, there is the remake. There's
the stupid video game.
There's the Hard as Balls video game. There's the upcoming Barry Jenkins movie that certainly curious about. Yeah. And obviously the Oscars and all that. Lion King's a huge hit.
Huge.
That's why we're talking about it tonight.
It's such a universal story, though. It's just the hero's journey. Like, it goes anywhere, pretty much. Just, I mean, I've never had to do that, but it's so easy to follow. You can just enjoy it. It translates well.
That's why it's a big
doesn't translate well. I'm taking a lot of shots at Hunchback tonight. Maybe I'm working stuff out on this commentary.
Madge Sinclair is the wife of Mufasa Sarabi. This is her final film role before she passed. She, of course, is also James Earl Jones' wife in Coming to America.
Oh, no kidding.
Which I was found humorous. It's like, oh yeah, they got them back together. That's nice. Hans Zimmer, they brought off of two films that were that in Africa, like had a lot of Africa in it. That's why he was kind of chosen. A World Apart and The Power of One.
Yep, I remember those.
In the air up there.
Even Dorf boxing picture of The Power of One. South African boxing picture, I recall. Oh.
Yeah.
The part is Barbara Hershey, right?
With Tim Rice, Alan Menken was unavailable. That's why they went to Elton John. He was suggested. ABBA was considered also to help do songs.
They declined. Weird.
They declined.
Well, he died, didn't he? The Ashman didn't he die in the middle of?
I didn't say Hal Ashman's already passed. I said Menken was unavailable. Elton John was suggested. ABBA declined doing the movie. Yeah, Hal Ashman's been passed away.
Two guys from ABBA, yeah.
Brandon, how many physical media releases have there been of The Lion King?
The Lion King? Probably a couple DVDs, some Blu-rays, and then one 4K.
Discs.
Yeah, let's see.
It had a Blu-ray and a 3D Blu-ray, I know that. So it had two alone right there. Okay.
So there, yeah, because there's the, they come out with, there's like The Lion King on DVD, and it has like the two-pack. There's the... let's see here. Yeah, there's a movie collection. 2003 Platinum Collector's Edition. And Signature Series. That's on regular Blu-ray. Yeah, Signature Collection. Just your typical run through with these things. Diamond Edition.
I still have the clamshell VHS.
I've got that somewhere.
Yeah.
Masterpiece Collection. It wasn't in the vault yet. Evil.
Order now. It could go back.
I don't think Lion King ever went in the vault, right? I think it's always been available because it sells so much. Like they've ever had a reason to like create a demand for it. It just is always in demand. It's not the Black Cauldron.
Right.
That probably went into the vault because those weren't about. That was about. Yeah, I mean, Snow White people wanted to see that too, and that went into the vault.
So. I mean, when? Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, like, when would Lion King go in the vault? Like, it's the
mid-late 90s, probably.
It's the biggest VHS ever. Then it comes out on DVD.
But I bet when it came out on DVD, it hadn't been out for a while.
I would assume yes, but I don't think they did. You know, because you know how they go. They'd be like, you got to get it now before it goes in the vault. I don't think they ever like. I don't think that's ever one where they announced it was going in a vault. It was just like a waiting period before it went on DVD and then before it went on Blu-ray. You know what I'm saying? Like, as opposed to like, you got to get it. I don't think they ever like had to go to that route.
It was a new release. I guess you're right. Yeah.
That's true too. Like the newer ones don't really tend to do that right in the same way.
Right.
Well, we've talked about The Lion King, a movie that's not long.
This is like a Run Lola Run episode. That was great.
Any other thoughts on The Lion King before we wrap up here?
Yeah. No, it
flies by.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Holds up.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I do want to say thank you for joining me for this because this completes another year of commentary tracks where we started off with five Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
and we still talk to each other. It's great.
Y'all survived this going. The fourth one. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And now, folks.
Think about watching that one time to prep before, too. Ooh.
No.
Oh, I winged it.
But, yeah, that's going to complete our 2024 year of commentaries, perhaps. Next year, I believe our plan for kind of our lead-off months is our We Should Have Done This By Now series.
Yes.
Right? Commentaries that we really probably should have done and somehow haven't. I don't want to get into too far about what that is. I know Raiders is definitely on that list, though, because we haven't done a single Indiana Jones movie. So it's like, well, yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, stay tuned for that and whatever else may come about. But as a wrap up here, let's go through down the line. Brandon, where can we find more of you online?
You can keep up with me on the social medias, including Blue Sky at Brandon4KUHD. My podcast is The Brandon Peters Show, which is found anywhere podcasts are found. And I have a YouTube channel that goes with it and has extra stuff. That is also, yeah, just look up Brandon Peters. And you can check out my website, thebrandonpetersshow.com. Also, PopCon 2025, the live podcast stage submissions are open. So you can sign up for that now. I've had a wait list the last couple PopCons, so you might want to get in. Over to you, Aaron.
Thank you. Mark Hoffmeyer, we can move on more of you.
I'm out there, all the socials. You should listen to the Dwayne Johnson sweat episode we did for Movie Sons of Flicks, Aaron and I. And then I joined Brandon for a marathon recording about the best directorial debuts. So, and then also I'm going to be talking to Brandon. We're going to do a 2024 draft. We're picking five movies each. So that should be
there. Boom.
Cool. Yancey?
Oh, you know, usual. I was on the Brandon Peters Show himself a few weeks ago.
Yes.
About Blood.
The very popular Blood Rage episode. Okay. Yes.
Very popular Thanksgiving episode. You know, Yancey Burns on Facebook. I guess I'm still on X, aren't I? I should get a Blue Sky. And, you know, hopefully some of these 2025 commentaries hear my dulcet tones with you guys.
We need that audiobook from you, the albums that you were talking about, your spoken word albums. So I'm getting those.
Hey, I'll work. I'm going to Christmas all three of you guys. Hanukkah.
Everything I do is on my Substack page, thecodiseat.substack.com. This podcast can be found everywhere you can find podcasts. You know where to find our show. Thank you, Brandon, Mark, Yancey, for joining me for this Lion King commentary track.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is great.
We'll be back with more of these, of course, and of course the regular show as well, which is we're wrapping up the year, so we've got plenty of award season talk and eventually our top 10 episode, which will happen. It's always a huge deal. But yeah, that's gonna do it.
The Beavers. It's great.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's gonna do it for this commentary track. So until next time, so long. Goodbye.